listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
We're very blessed to have Anna Petley at New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science and to have her on her show. But we're very blessed to have a listener come and join us. And she reached out to us. And it's Margaret Fletcher. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
I'm a little shocked by you because I can see you and listeners can't. And you look wonderfully vibrant, extremely youthful, and you have been terrifically sick, I imagine.
I was. That's 12 years ago now. I was very, very sick.
And your children span from 42 to 18. So that gives us a bit of an indication of your cohort.
Yes.
Five kids spread out. Tell us about getting sick with autoimmune disease. We've got plenty of time. Mm-hmm. This is a complicated disease, complicated symptoms, hard to track down. So take your time because we want to really understand it.
Well, I had been healthy all of my life before I wasn't, before I got sick. Fit, you know, I didn't do everything right, but I always had a health focus, was always active and ate well. And then one day I found myself sick and getting sicker and sicker.
How did you find that? How did that sick, feeling sick manifest itself?
A few aches and pains to begin with in my joints and just a general feeling of malaise. But it progressed fairly rapidly. I had had something similar about 7 years prior. In fact, when I look back, I suspect in my 20s I'd had another episode, but it was never identified. But this time it was much, much worse. And the progression of the disease was a lot more rapid.
And you knew you were sick, not just getting old.
Oh, I knew. I became very rapidly debilitated. I was in a lot of pain. And I had a diagnosis. And I had the doctors telling me every month when I'd go to see the specialist that I have an incurable autoimmune disease and that I would be on immunosuppressant drugs for life. And so I would go home and cry.
I bet. Because how old were you? No, don't answer that because you know
that.
Well,
I was 48. So 48. That's 12 years ago.
So you were young. You had your life ahead of you.
I did. I had my youngest three children still at home, two at primary school and one at high school. And so, you know, life looked very, very bleak. I was on my own.
So your autoimmune disease, let's just get this. How does it tell us about what symptoms you were suffering at the time that you went on the suppressants?
I was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, which is an inflammatory type of arthritis. It's related to the skin disease psoriasis. I don't have psoriasis, and I've never had it, but I do have the gene for it. I have a brother with psoriasis and two maternal aunts. And so it's in the family. But it's more usual that you'll get the psoriasis first and then the arthritis later on. However, occasionally it happens the other way around.
And so arthritis is, I know, joint pain and joint stiffness. So the joints are inflamed, are they?
Yes. So with an inflammatory type of arthritis such as rheumatoid, which psoriatic arthritis is similar, although it's more aggressive. So you get joint deformation much quicker. You have swelling, you have pain and you have an inability to use your joints because they simply don't function. Jeepers. When they are inflamed like that and swollen. And so I had it in my jaw, both TMJs. I could only open my mouth about a centimetre. my mother came and made me smoothies and mashed food for me.
You couldn't eat?
No, no, I couldn't. I didn't have proper jaw function. I could barely, you know, maybe a centimetre open my mouth.
Could you talk?
Yes, I could talk, yes. But you don't have any strength in your joints when they're inflamed like that. I had it in my spine, and that was the most painful because every movement hurt and the pain never went away. I had it in my chest, in my left elbow, both hands, wrists, fingers and thumbs. So I couldn't pick up, I couldn't grasp anything. I had no grip strength. I would have to hold a cup between my wrists. Even moving a pillow was difficult. I couldn't unlock the door to my office. I had to, my eldest daughter's a doctor, and she got me a little device to put my key on so that I'd have more leverage so that I could unlock the door. I couldn't push open physically. I didn't have the physical strength to open the door to the toilet on the floor that I worked in the hospital I was working in. I had to take the lift two flights down where there was a door that I could get through. And I was a person who'd always taken the stairs. And now I just physically couldn't. So I had it in my pelvis as well, in my pelvis, and in my knee, my right knee, and my right ankle.
You were totally had it.
Life looked extremely grim to me.
Because and pain, constant pain?
Constant pain.
How bad of pain?
How
bad of pain?
Well, I've had 5 natural births, and I was worse than that because it was constant, you know.
And no end in sight.
No happy occasion to look forward to, but just a slow deterioration.
Now, and the pain is in all those places or one or two places?
No, all of those places. All of those places. But the spinal pain was the worst. And I'd be very afraid when my children were coming near me that they were going to bump me. It was a very difficult time. And I was asking myself, how was I going to live well? And how was I going to care for my children? And how was I going to keep my job?
So you're a sole parent. No one to help you at home. 3 kids dependent upon you, including 2 at primary school.
I was very fortunate in that I'd just built a house with my daughter-in-law. And so she was living in the house and nice. She helped look after the children. But I would just be so exhausted. My bedroom was next to the garage. I'd come into the garage and flop onto the bed, and that was me for the day. And I was at the point where I was thinking I'm going to have to give up my job. I had no energy because not only did I have those symptoms, but I was just exhausted. I couldn't eat a lot. I didn't realize the medication was contributing to that. I was on medication because I simply couldn't do anything without it. And I'd never taken medication before, not on any medication now, haven't since. But I needed to move. Now, I was on high doses of prednisone while they were waiting.
Well, tell us about the medication in a minute. I want to go right through that. Okay. I'm just trying. So what was your job?
I'm a midwife and a nurse and a lactation consultant, and I had just got a job as a clinical midwife specialist, which was providential because without that, if I'd still been doing the shift work, I would have been out of a job. But I now had a job in an office and in a clinic where I would see outpatients. I had a very kind boss who allowed me to just focus. The teaching was a large part of my job, teaching staff.
Sleeping?
Sleeping was most difficult. I had a lot of pillows in the bed to try and get comfortable. But I like to lie on my side. There was no way I could do that comfortably.
And how would you get on preparing food?
Well, everything was slow and painful, and I don't think I prepared a lot of food. I don't even know what my kids ate half the time, unless my daughter-in-law prepared something. They probably made themselves toast, or one of my daughters, quite a cook, even at a young age. When I was doing shift work, I'd get a text saying, Mum, is it all right if I make pumpkin soup and focaccia bread for dinner? This is when she was like 10 years old, and I'd go, yes, wonderful.
Did, I can't imagine it. You, did it occur to you, I guess it's your kids that keep you going, because if you didn't have the kids, would you think about checking out, like just committing suicide?
I didn't get to that point.
Okay, because you everything ahead of you was to get worse. Like,
it looked very grim to me. The doctors did assure me that, or one of the nurse specialists assured me that there were people who lived very well with this condition and that the medication controlled it for them. But okay, it simply wasn't working for me.
Okay, tell us about, yeah, sorry, I cut in.
Well, they wanted me to do a fair trial of the immunosuppressant drugs so that they could then go on to some newer, different kinds of medications, some experimental ones, because every month I would have a specialist appointment and every month I was worse. And they would say, look, you're not getting better. There's more and more joints and tendons involved each time we see you, and you're going to be on these drugs for life, because they knew I didn't like them. And I'd be scouring the internet for a solution. I'd be reading books, you know, not all from cover to cover, but I read lots and lots of books, perused some of them. Some of them I read from cover to cover, because I thought if one person can go into remission, another one can too. Mm. I just need to find the
Tell me about the drugs they had you on.
Well, immediately was prednisone, which makes you feel great, I have to say. Made my skin look really nice. It's a horrible drug. And of course, an immunosuppressant. And high doses of, I took far more than I was supposed to, of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And then sulfasalazine is another drug that I was on, an immunosuppressant drug, and methotrexate was the one that I was just started on before I found a solution.
And these drugs are anti-inflammatory drugs.
Well, they suppress the immune response, which is causing the inflammation.
I'm just reading about them.
In suppressing the immune system, you have other risks.
Like getting serious disease.
Yeah, like dying of cancer. And I met someone when I had become well, and I told him about what I had found out. I met a man who had a much, much milder case of what I had. And but for him, the drugs controlled it. And so he decided, well, he was happy with that. But he was dead in 5 years of cancer.
Wow. Did you take painkillers?
Yes, I took non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, probably took paracetamol as well, I can't remember, but, I mean, you know, nothing really touched it. It gave me enough function to, you know, slowly and painfully go about my business. I drove a manual car at the time. And
goodness.
I know, it was difficult. My kids would change gears for me. Now, my son, my youngest, who was 8, he must have been younger. It's 12 years ago. No, sorry. He's 21 now. He's not 18. I said he was 18. He's 21. Sorry. He was 8 at the time, and or just turned 9, in fact. Yeah, 9. He was amazing. We got to the place where we were the smooth machine. I never told him what gear to change into or when to change gears.
Isn't that wonderful? You must have felt a terrible mother.
I just felt desperate, absolutely desperate and despairing. I was desperate to find a solution. And I have to say, in the end, that was to my advantage. Desperation made me look at something I would never have looked at otherwise.
Yeah, when I get tired, which is all the time, I have no, what's the word, patience with my little son. And I hate myself for it, right? Because you know how they can be so annoying.
Yeah.
And they come along and they're pestering you and you're exhausted, right? And you're just wanting a moment to yourself or something. And here you are, sole parent mum, in pain, struggling, exhausted. And an eight-year-old, I can't imagine. Did you get cranky or are you one of those mothers that just have endless patience for young ones?
I don't think I had the energy to be cranky.
Wow.
And I'd been through a lot of other things and learned a little bit, but I needed to learn a whole lot more. And I am grateful for this experience.
Isn't life great like that? That you, the worst times you've ever lived, ever had, you look back on and think, wow, thank goodness I had that.
Yeah.
Tell me your way out of it.
Well, you know, I was searching for a solution. I tried many things. Two of my aunts came and I just moved into this house that I built with my daughter-in-law. There was nothing growing there. I love gardening, but all I could do was look at it. But my aunts came and they dug a vegetable garden and they grew lots of greens. And my aunt Margaret, whom I'm named after, she got me onto green smoothies. Now that, I have to say, helped the inflammation. It did decrease the inflammation in my spine, but it wasn't a permanent solution, but it was helpful at the time. I tried water fasting. Now, the other thing I was going to tell you. I lost a lot of weight. I would have, in the really acute phase, I would have night sweats. I'd just wake up drenched in sweat. But I'd lost about 10 kg, and I'm not a big person. I probably started off, my whole life had been around 54, 55 kg, and I lost about 10.
Wow.
And then my book that I'd ordered on fasting arrived, and I thought, well, I've got to try this, you know. And so I started off with juice fasting for 5 days and then went on to water fasting for a couple of weeks. The pain disappeared. I had no pain.
Tell me what juice fasting and water fasting are.
Well, juice fasting, I just juiced greens. I didn't do it in a very scientific way. I just, what I had, greens and fruit and vegetables. I didn't want it to taste too ugly. I wanted to be able to drink it, so I put juice and fruit. And after 5 days, I had no pain in my spine. And then I went on to the water fasting, which was just water. So I just drank water, nothing else. And I had no pain. But the thing with that was I had lost a lot of weight. Now I lost another couple of kg, and I knew that, you know, you get to a critical point with weight loss where it's not good. You don't want to risk losing heart muscle. And I wasn't doing this under supervision because I didn't know the doctors who would supervise me.
That's suggestive that it was a food that was causing the immune, no?
Possibly, but my solution didn't include food. I needed to eat, and so I ate again, and the pain was back and the inflammation was back.
But just on the juicing, sorry to back up the truck, because I tried juicing and I loved it, and I bought a little hand juicer on the local Facebook trading thing, and you turn it by hand, and I put greens in, and I started having it for lunch, because you have to do it cold compress, right? You can't whiz it.
Well, that's the best way, yes.
Is that how you did it?
No, I didn't have one of those.
I was going to ask you about the technology, because they're expensive.
And they are,
And I
just used what I had.
And I couldn't imagine you doing a hand turner, because it's exhausting.
No, I couldn't. There's no, I wouldn't have had the ability to do that.
And how long did you water fast for?
In total, the fasting was 2 weeks. So it was 5 days with juice and then up to the 2 week mark with water.
Wow.
Yeah. But I lost a couple more kg and I didn't, you know, my kids thought I was going to die. I looked anorexic. I was horribly embarrassed because I was so thin. Now I could wear a pair of track pants under my skinny jeans. And I bought myself my first puffer jacket, not just because I felt the cold more, but to bulk myself up because I was just embarrassed. And I grew fine blonde hair on my cheeks to compensate for the loss of fat.
And you, wow, that's extraordinary. That's not something most people would admit. You're so open. But you stuck, I mean, you stuck at that because while you were doing that, you were pain-free.
I was pain-free. It was amazing. And I do think fasting is good for health, but, you know, like if you have a serious disease. However, I think there's something that is even more important. So the food that we eat, the fasting, the therapies that we use are good, can be very good. But what we have to realise is that we're just treating effects.
Mm.
Now, medication treats effects. Other therapies treat effects. What we need is the removal of the cause. And that is the only thing that can bring true and lasting healing and holistic healing.
Mm.
So I didn't know that, though. I was just, you know, doing what I could. But one day I got a phone call from my brother. It was my mother's birthday, and she was having it at my place just because it's got a nice big space and all the family came. My brother rang to say happy birthday, and he spoke to me first. And he told me that he had been to a health seminar with a Dr. Horst Mueller. And he told me a little bit about it. Now, he used an illustration of a tree. Nothing he said made sense to me. There was only one thing that I heard was this man might be able to help you. And because I was desperate and I tried lots of things, I thought, okay, well, I'll email this man. So I emailed him and he emailed me back. And I can remember what he said. He said, there is a solution to your problem in removing the cause. And this was the first doctor who gave me hope, because every month I'd have my inflammatory markers taken. I would have my some liver and kidney function tests taken, just because, you know, the medication can damage them. And every month, you know, the inflammatory markers were sky high, and the, you know, the message was the same. And they'd say to me, Margaret, what have you researched this month? And I'd tell them, and they'd say, have you thought of being a health researcher? And I'd think, no, I just want to find a solution. But anyway, so this particular month after I had, I talked to my brother, I emailed Dr. Horst Mueller, I got his email back, and we scheduled a call.
Now, Dr. Horst Mueller is in Germany.
He's in Germany. He's an ear, nose, and throat surgeon.
And how did your brother attend the seminar of him if he's in Germany?
My brother lives in Germany.
Ah, sorry, I didn't realize.
Yes. Yeah, my brother lives in Germany. So,
oh, well, that's fortuitous. And when you wrote to Dr. Mueller, did you send like your rough overview of your disease, or did you send him screeds?
I sent him a couple of paragraphs, small paragraphs.
And he came back to you?
Yes, and he scheduled a meeting. Back then, he would have generally used Skype, but my laptop wasn't going, and so it was a phone call. And we talked for about 3 hours.
No.
And he never charges anything for this. Now, he's an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, and if you go to his practice and you have a medication or some surgery, he'll charge for that. But he says, if you want to know the cause, then you come back and he'll talk to you for free. And so,
how do you spell his name?
H O R S T.
H O R
R S T.
And it's Mueller, M U M E.
Is it M U E? Which way is it? Yeah, M U E L L E R. Or a U with the two dots on top. Forget what you call that.
He's on YouTube.
The Law of Life. Is that the one you've done?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So you would be thinking this is crazy. 3 hours. And he can help me.
Yeah. yes, I did. And we had follow-up emails and phone calls. And because I have a health background, I struggled with a little bit of the things he was saying. It got to the point where he said to me, Margaret, have you found the solution or are you still looking? And I thought, well, you know, as I say, desperation was on my side. Because I was so desperate, I decided that I would try it.
He looks a young man.
Well, you depends which YouTube you've found. You might not have found his latest ones. He's the same age as I am, I believe.
Okay.
Born the same year. I did send a link in to his latest YouTube videos.
Yeah,
I got it. When I met him, he would do his talks using a whiteboard and a flip chart. And I said to him, have you ever thought of using a PowerPoint? He said, no, this gives me much more flexibility. But now he uses a PowerPoint.
What year was it? What year was it that you had the 3-hour conversation with him?
That was 2013.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. And he, when he opened his own practice, so as a doctor, you know, you train to work very fast and efficiently. I think he said his record, and it'll be on one of his YouTubes, his record is something like seeing 70 patients in 5 hours. But when he opened his own practice, yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? when he opened his own practice, he now had time to talk to his patients because he'd have one, at the beginning, there'd be one patient and then half an hour on another one and then maybe an hour before the next one. And so he sat and he chatted to them. Now, he's a Christian doctor and he was aware that he was only treating symptoms and he had asked God to show him the cause. And his patients taught him a lot. What he found in their stories was a common thread. He found that all stories had one underlying thought behind them, and that was the thought of loss. And he found that in every case with every patient, there was a correlation between loss and disease. And when he first saw it, he couldn't believe it. He thought to himself, there must be a law operating here because when you've interviewed 40,000 patients and they all have the same story, there's got to be something to this. But what he noticed was it's not just loss, but it's personal loss. So if you imagine the worst possible loss, say perhaps the loss of a child, you couldn't think of anything more devastating. And you could think of the dysfunction that it would cause to your mind and perhaps to your body as well. But if you hear about the loss of a child in a news bulletin, or it's someone else's child that you know, it doesn't affect you the same. It's only personal loss that causes damage. And so he reasoned that a thought that causes dysfunction cannot be a good thought because the body is made to function well. And so what is wrong with the thought of personal loss? And he looked into that. But he, you know, he realized that we all have that as when he looked at this issue of loss, he realized that we have not just physical needs like that he'd learnt about at in his training in his medical training. We need food, you know, we need oxygen, we need water. But what he didn't learn was that we also need love. And this is what he found was the lack in all his patients. And if all our needs are met, then we have full function. We have health. But if your needs are unmet, say you don't get enough oxygen, you're going to go into dysfunction. And if that goes to the extreme, then you'll eventually have death. And for most of our physical needs, you can have too much or too little. But what he found with your spiritual needs, it's that either or, you either have them or you don't have them. So he puts every spiritual need under the banner of love. So a need for justice, a need for harmony, a need for liberty, a need for belonging. And he reasoned that if we have needs, then we can't produce them of ourselves. So we need oxygen because we can't produce oxygen. We need food because we can't produce our own food. We need water because we don't produce our own water. And so we have to take our needs from outside of ourselves. And so his talks are called the law of life because what he found was that this law is how everything functions, every created thing functions. And that is that nothing can exist from itself or by itself. So it has to take its energy in from outside of itself. And the second part to the law, the second principle, is that nothing can exist or function for itself. And so it must use what it takes and then pass it on or pass on the products of what it takes. Very simple, very elegant law, and you can simplify it to take, to give. And if you're a Christian, this might resonate. Or even absolutely. If you're not a Christian.
Absolutely it resonates.
Because Jesus summed up the law. It was put into two tables by intention. And he summed up the law by love to God and love to your neighbor. But of course, we all think that we love God with our love and we love our neighbor with our love. But this is
Christ's love.
Yes, it's a fundamental flaw in our thinking.
Mm.
And it is that flaw that causes us personal loss, I would have to say. But we misunderstand what loving God is, because love, you know, how Jesus said that he is the living manna that came down from heaven. He said that he's the bread of life, and that he's the living water. If we drink of him, that we'll never thirst. So to love God is to depend on God. To worship God is to depend on him as the source of love and of life, the source of all things, and to recognize the difference between us and him. So he's God, he's the creator, and he is the supplier of all needs. And that is how we love God, to depend on him, because all created things are created as a channel. So a channel has nothing. It must take what it needs and it must pass it on. And this is the fundamental difference between God. But you see, we think that we give our love. We think that we create love from ourselves.
No.
But we become very disappointed when we don't get it back, don't we? And it's not by on purpose. It's automatic. It's, you know, if someone hurts us.
Because you don't do a deal with God. Love you and you'll love me. That is not how it works.
No, it's not. But we do deals with people all the time.
Mm. I'm loving this. I'm talking to Margaret Fletcher about an amazing topic. I'm sitting here just loving it. Were you a Christian when you first met Dr. Mueller?
I was brought up a Christian, but I had gone astray a number of times. And I had gone through experiences that made me come to the point in my life where I questioned, did God even exist?
Mm.
I had been so very unhappy that I just identified with all the suffering in the world, and I thought, you know, if there was a God, I was extremely angry with him. And that's the point I was at when I met Dr. Mueller. But as I say, I was desperate, and I had tried everything that looked to me like it could work. And so now when I heard this, well, I did resonate with it as well, because I had loss. I had suffered loss, and I didn't realize it was still affecting me. My life had gone on. You know, I'd been divorced, and it'd been quite a traumatic marriage breakdown. And it was my second marriage, which made it even more of a failure, and something that I never wanted to let go of because of that. But I was in a position where I look at it now that if I stayed in the marriage, it seemed like there was loss, great loss to have in the marriage. And if I left, there was great loss. Because I wanted a husband, I wanted a father for my children, I wanted an intact family unit. I priced these things very highly. But it seemed like I was in a loss-loss situation. And it's that kind of situation that causes disease in the body.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm reading C.S. Lewis. I love C.S. Lewis. I can't get enough of C.S. Lewis. And he talks about God in precisely that way. And so I understand what you're saying, because he says we all have a need.
Mm-hmm.
And that need is put there by God.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this emptiness and this loss. And he explains that we don't understand what love is.
No, we don't.
Because you have to realize that God is everything.
Yes.
And it's not about loving him. It's about devoting yourself to him.
Yes.
And he never connects it to disease. But I'm just, every night I read C.S. Lewis, right? So this is exactly how he describes it without the connection to disease. He talks about it being sort of like incomplete.
Right.
Oh, I so love this. So carry on. How did this play out?
Well, how it played out was I went to see my specialist and they said, well, what have you researched this month? And I told them all about it.
That thing, you're mad, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pointed to their head like this. Said,
no.
Just Margaret. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Ushered me out of the office. And I went home and I cancelled the next month's appointment.
Because wow, that's ballsy.
I thought, I don't need to hear that again. I had my bloods taken as usual, but I didn't attend that appointment. I went in 2 months' time. And in 2 months' time, I had almost full function, virtually no pain. The doctors pulled up their my blood results on their computer screen, and it was nicely graphed. It went from sky high down in a sharp incline down to 1 point above normal where my inflammatory markers. I said, I've still got a bit of stiffness in this knee when I bend, and the doctor said, don't worry about that. You can bend better than I can. And he said, what was the name of that doctor? Is he a medical doctor?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle. But I'm not special.
You're not special. You're one of God's creatures.
Yeah.
It's
the law of nature.
I came into this interview thinking, we'll do this lovely interview and it'll be something like, then I got this doctor and he said, don't eat eggs. And I stopped eating eggs and I was cured. But that's not what he said.
He said the only fast you need is the fast of Isaiah 58.
Isaiah 58, tell me.
Where it says, this is the fast that I have chosen. And it's about, I can't quote it, but it's about setting the captives free, dealing your bread to the hungry. You'll have to Google it, sorry.
Shout it aloud, do not hold back, raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare it to my people, their rebellion, and to the descendants of Jacob, their sins. For days after day, they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this a kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, here I am. Wow.
Sorry.
If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide your ways. He will satisfy your needs in the sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fall. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You'll be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I'll cause you to ride and triumph on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken.
So God is not interested in our outward displays of piety. And, you know, the message that he gave to the Pharisees, that Jesus gave, is the same message as that one there to his people in the Old Testament. And it's the same message he gives to his people. If we think about the message to the church of Laodicea in Revelation, this is the final church in earth's history. And it's the same message that he wants to come and set the captives free. He wants to clothe our nakedness. He wants to heal us of our diseases. God wants all good things for us. And so when he asks us to worship him, it's not because he's egotistical. He's saying, I'm the source of life. I'm the source of love. I can fulfill every need. You are a creature. There is only one God. There is only one source of life, of love, of everything that you need. So depend on me. And when you depend on me, so if you think that we are made as a channel, if we were fully connected to God, when our eight-year-old was being irritating and annoying and we were tired, what would come out of the channel?
Love.
Yeah, love. And you see, what comes out must be inside us. So the law of life, which is take to give, which is the spirit of the Ten Commandments, take love from God, give it to others, is also the law of cause and effect, because every effect has a cause, and the effect will be according to the cause. So if you imagine that, like a hose pipe, and you attach it to a pure, you attach it to a tap, you know, with pure water, only pure water can come out. But if you attach it to a dirty water source, then only dirty water can come out. And what comes out of us under times of stress shows us that we're not attached to God the way we were designed to be. And that's not by any fault of our own. It's by inheritance, because we know that Adam and Eve were attached to God when they were created. They were created perfect. And it's a mystery that they believed a lie, but to believe a lie, they had to now, instead of being attached to God and having faith in his words, now they trusted, as we attach by trust, they trusted the words of the serpent. And now they were separated from God. And this is the inheritance of every child of Adam, which is all of us. And so what comes out when we're provoked is what is inside. And God doesn't condemn us for that, because Jesus says, I came not into the world to condemn it, but to save it. In fact, he allows the suffering to show us what's inside of ourselves. And so this is what I found inside of myself. Actually, I thought I was a very nice person until I met Dr. Horst Mueller. Because, you know, I'm kind of easygoing and easy to get on with. And I won't let out my hurt and my frustration and my anger, but it will cause disease in me instead, because it's going to come out either in behavior or disease. We are going to be uncontrolled or we're going to be sick.
And this is what Dr. Mueller is teaching you in these calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
I so get it, but I'm so far away from it. I feel
we
so desperately short.
And that's...
How do you attach yourself to God? How did you do it?
Well, you know, I didn't understand it the way I'm explaining it to you back then. I had a very, very superficial understanding. And it's only COVID did me a great favor. I was mandated, and it made me look at what the real solution is more closely and decide to understand it so that I could teach it and help people. I had talked to people about it, but I just usually refer them off to Dr. Mueller. But now when he came to New Zealand the last time, and he always has lots of people who come to him for counselling, and he was up to midnight, then he was going to sleep on the floor of the church hall, and then he was going to catch a flight somewhere else. I thought, I should be able to help this man by now. I need to understand this. And so I decided to learn more myself, because I was healed quite quickly, and I was happy. I was on cloud nine. But I kind of, I guess, selfishly thought I knew all I needed to know. You know,
yes, indeed.
I knew that I had placed others in the place of God. I had, they were my source, and when it wasn't a source that tasted good, that I would become hurt and disappointed, and that I thought that I was brokenhearted because I had great love, but actually what I had was great unmet expectations, because love bears all things. I'm not saying you stay in this dangerous situation, but love is never hurt for itself. Love will only hurt for the other person, and that will never damage your body, because love is other-centered.
Explain two things to me, Margaret. I'm speaking with Margaret Fletcher. I think this is the most amazing interview I've ever had, Margaret. Thank you. Explain to me what you did way back in, 2012, that saw you in a month healed.
Well, I knew that I had put others in the place of God, the person that I felt hurt by, and I don't want to talk about that person because, you know, that's not nice. but so I needed to put God in that place, and I had no clue how to do this.
No.
But I prayed constantly for it. Because I was so ill, I found it hard to focus. And so I read things that were uplifting, that were easy for me to read, like, you know, Google all the verses about healing and read them. But you see, for the first time in my life, I actually appropriated them to myself. I believed that God would do this for me, because when Dr. Mueller said, "Margaret, have you found the answer, or are you still looking?" I thought, okay, I will exercise the faith of the smallest mustard seed you can imagine, and I will give this a go. Somewhat like Captain Naaman in the Old Testament. Yeah, his servant said, you know, "Well, why don't you try it? If he'd asked you to do something difficult, you'd do it." So I thought, okay. And I, as I say, I was so desperate. So I put my heart and soul into it, and I prayed constantly. I'd be driving to work and I'd be praying, and I'd, you know, saying, "God, help me to love you, to take love from you, and to have divine love specifically for those who'd hurt me." And God gave me so much insight about why people do the things they do. And so that I now had compassion, where before I just felt hurt and angry and resentful. Now I had compassion and understanding, and stopped judging.
And you felt love.
Yes, I did. I felt amazing. I also, you see, so that's what the key things that I understood. I needed to make God my love source. I needed to have divine love for those who'd hurt me. And I needed to be a channel of blessing to others by doing things for others. I could barely do anything. I did a couple of little things, you know.
What does divine love to other people, how does that compare to loving other people?
So divine love is God's love, and it's a love that gives, and that's a full stop there. So it's human love is a give and a take, you know. I'll give you love, but as soon as you stop loving me, as soon as you're nasty to me, I don't have loving thoughts for you anymore. You see, what is love? What is love but a thought?
Mm.
And whose thought is it?
Mm.
You see, I felt hard done by, but I'll tell you, Doctor, his first case, because it's a really nice, simple illustration that really made him see this quite clearly. There was a woman who came to him, and she'd had severe headaches for 2 weeks, and it was very evident that she was in a lot of pain. Now, she'd been referred by her general practitioner to Dr. Mueller to see if there was any sinus involvement, but there was nothing to see, and he sent her off for an urgent CT scan because he thought perhaps there was a brain tumour, because it was such intense pain. But that came back clear as well. Now, it might not always be the case that it comes back clear but this had only been 2 weeks. And so it was clear, there was nothing to see. And he said to her, what happened 2 weeks ago? Because the cause must always come before the effect. And she had moved, a year before, she had moved from North Germany to South Germany to live with her boyfriend. She'd left her family, she'd left her friends, she'd left her job, and she'd been living with this man for a year. 2 weeks ago, she found out that he was now unfaithful to her. Now, he'd been unfaithful, he'd done something wrong, but she had the headaches. But can he cause her headaches? See, when she thought about him, before she knew of his unfaithfulness, her thoughts were of love. And she loved, as you normally do, generously and with her whole heart. But when she heard this, now what were her thoughts?
She hated him. Horrible.
She hated him. Yeah, revenge.
Yes. Hate.
And you see, the perpetrator knows they're doing something wrong. But how can God reach those of us who think that we're good people? How can he show us that there's something wrong inside of us that he wants to help us remove?
Become sick.
Yeah. Uncontrolled or sick, things have to go wrong. Because if we're born deceived, Jeremiah 17 verse 9 became a favorite verse of mine. It says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And it's a funny verse to have as a favorite because it enlightened me to what was wrong in me. And the next verse says, I, the Lord God, try the reins of the heart, and the reins are your innermost part of you. That we're our, and else there's something in our subconscious.
And blaming the boyfriend just makes it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's the easiest thing in the world. I mean, I'm not saying she's responsible for being unfaithful. No. That's not my point.
No.
But what you're saying is he sinned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm filled with the love of the Creator inside of me. I love this man, but hate the sin.
Yes, yes.
Because God has taught us to love our neighbor.
Yes.
Which is everyone. Because everyone is made in his image. Hate the sin. And so what? You can deal with it?
You can deal with it without without pressure.
You can still kick him out. You can still kick him out.
Yes. Oh, yes. And you do that for his sake, because love gives consequences for the sake of the other. It's not to protect myself. It's because this man has done wrong and he needs an opportunity to make that right with his maker.
And if we don't have God and recognize his love for us, are we looking for it in other people and constantly disappointed?
All of the time. You see, the law is that you must take, and it's legitimate. We need love.
Yes.
But we look for it in the wrong place. So, and being born disconnected from God, we automatically connect to others. So first to our mothers from conception, and to our fathers, and to everyone else. And so what God wants to show us is where the channel is blocked. And every time we do get angry with our child, or we do get disappointed with someone, or we do something wrong, whatever it is, then we can say we can go to God with that. And say, oh, the channel was blocked here, you know. Help me to put you where I've had that person. Because we're now dependent on other people. So all of our actions are dependent on what others do. How we feel is dependent on what others do. Because we're going to be happy when they're being nice to us and when they're loving to us, but the minute they're not, automatically, without choice, we don't want to have horrible feelings to them, towards them, but we will, through no choice, because we have inherited a nature that is disconnected from God and wants to take, well, we want to, actually what we want to do is we give to others and we think that we've invested something of our own. And you see, this goes, now let's go back to that thought of personal loss. What is wrong with the thought of personal loss? Because we think we give of ourselves, and this is what's wrong with it. Who only can give something of themselves? Only someone who can create and who can possess or own things. You see, everything that we have belongs to God. Everything we are belongs to God. But we think we are God. We act as if we are independent. We act as spiritually independent. And so when Satan said to Eve, "You will be like God," you see, that became her new identity. She placed her trust in the serpent. Now she had faith in his words. And now, and this is what we have inherited, this identity that we're no longer children of God, but we are our own God. And now this is no, you have to be a madman to say I'm God. But that's
I agree 100%.
And it's in our subconscious. It's not known to us. You see, the heart, I believe, is the subconscious part of our mind where our identity lies.
You were desperate. You were desperate back then. Was it difficult to become a child of God? Because I don't think I've got there.
None of us have got there. But by faith, we know we will get there because God has promised that he will finish the good work in us that he started. And so by faith, you are a child of God.
Wow. You, people say, what would convince me there's a God? Oh, I'd need to see a miracle. I'd need to see Jesus heal someone or walk on water or make 7 loaves to feed 5,000. You have seen the miracle.
I have seen a miracle, but, you know, our reason should tell us as well.
Yes.
Because there is another force that can do miracles. And so the miracle is confirmation because, you know, the Bible tells us that Satan in the last days comes down performing miracles and wondrous things.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, yes. It's there in Revelation. And those who only believe what they see, such as, you know, your atheist, they will be swayed by that. So this is why we must know the law and God's word.
So you got well.
Yes.
The doctors that were treating you couldn't believe it.
No, they followed me up for 6 years doing nothing for me. I was on no medication. One day I was busy working at the hospital and forgot my appointment, and I rang up and I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I've forgotten my appointment." And they said, "Look, we're not doing anything for you, we'll discharge you." I'm sure that they just thought it would could not be more than a temporary remission because it was progressing every time I saw them.
Did they, any of them, understand what had happened?
I talked to them a little bit. I gave one of the consultants a DVD. I don't know whether he watched it. I put up posters when I invited, because after that I found that Dr. Horsemuller was going to be in Melbourne, and so I invited him to Hamilton, and he came because he goes wherever he's invited, and he gives free lectures, and he counsels people for free because the gospel is free, and that is what he's teaching. Because haven't got to the best part. I didn't understand this, but I can see that this is what I did, but without understanding the process. Because it's at the cross that we have our healing, because what is wrong inside us is that we have the wrong identity, and we can only change that at the cross. At the cross, we change our life for Jesus' life. And now nothing, not only have I never done wrong in my life, but nothing wrong has ever been done to me. It was now done to Jesus. So the pain that I suffered, he now suffered. You see, I can never have personal loss as a child of God, because I belong to God, and the loss is only to my Father.
He took it for us.
Yeah, he took it for us. He took it for us. So by creation and by redemption, we cannot have personal loss, because we already belong to God. We're his creation, but we don't know it. And until we surrender our lives back to him, you know, we're even in rebellion, we're still dependent on him.
Yes.
We're on life support. We're living the dead life of Adam, but now we take the life of the second Adam. So Jesus is called the second Adam, because what he did on the cross was he destroyed the problem that was in man. That's why he had to become a man, because it's an inside problem, and it required an inside job, so to speak. And so he rose a new creature.
Oh, I'm so like a little kid understanding this. And there's so much to know and understand. Tell me, you said with COVID coming along, you decided to get serious into this. What did that involve?
Well, actually, Dr. Mueller held a symposium online where we could, people from all around the world who were interested could listen in, and we could exchange, you know, have questions and answers and discuss it. And you see, for me, something that I found very tricky was, so I had adopted this model of disease, but when it came to infectious disease, I found that a little bit tricky because of my training, I have to say. Although I'd always been interested in health, and I'd always thought that, you know, the state of your body was more important than, you know, what microbes might be around. But this did cause me a little bit of difficulty, and so I needed to understand it more. So that was one of the reasons. But also, you know, we saw how quickly the world can change. And there's such a striking parallel with what happened and what is described in Revelation with the mark of the beast, that you had non-Christians talking about it as if it was the mark of the beast. And so it's like it's a trial run. And if you, I don't know if you've studied any of the prophecies in Daniel and Revelation, but
no.
They are quite compelling and amazing in their accuracy. How accurately they've been fulfilled. And if you just look at Daniel 2, there's a Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and it shows us that we are living in the time of the feet. Now, when you understand more of Daniel and Revelation, because there are these visions and prophecies, they're parallel. So one expands and enlarges on the other. But the template is the Daniel 2 one, and then it focuses in down on the end times as we get into the later books of Daniel and Revelation. Now, I'm not good at explaining it. I would like to be. Something else I need to work on. But from my study, what I understand is that we live in the toenails of time. And so that was another reason for wanting to study it, because you see, this is not just about health. I mean, health, we come to God because we have a need, right? We come from our selfish hearts because we want something for ourselves. And we can only do that, right? Because we, as Jesus said, can a bad tree bring forth good fruit? Well, no, it can't. So we're born with an inheritance that is not good. And of course, once again, there's no guilt and there's no blame for that. And there's no condemnation. But when we see it, God now wants us to bring it to him. So he draws us. He draws us with healing, with, you know, promises of eternal life, with streets of gold, because these things are true. This is what is in store for us, but it's also what will attract us to him, so that he can then, as we come to know him, he can help to change our hearts. So it's, and, you know, in preparation for Jesus' second return, what we need is we need a heart of love for all mankind.
Amazing.
And so I really wanted to know about this so that I could help people, not just in the here and now, but for eternity.
And that means Bible study.
Well, I think Bible study, yes, but initially I just want to teach them that, because we don't see that there's something wrong in us. And so when they come for help, we have to see that it's the thoughts that we think,
yes,
that affect our body. No one else's thoughts can affect our body. So it's the thoughts
and
that
everyone sort of gets that, right, nowadays, right? Sort of get that, but you don't realize that behind it is God.
No.
That's the jump.
Well, that's the jump. But then if you haven't...
We call it our subconscious, or we call it bad thoughts making us sick, or... But we have this need to love God and obey God.
Well, we have a need for love, and so if we have a need for love, then by definition, we don't have love of ourselves,
yes,
to give.
Yes.
So otherwise we would have no need for it. We would,
yes,
be our own source.
I understand that.
Yes. And so...
this is so great and so heavy.
So there's only one solution, and that is to go to the source of love. And so that's the starting point. And, you know, people can try to do that on their own if they want to. But I think without the new life, then we're stuck, because we react automatically. We have no control over it.
Would you recommend listeners watching the YouTubes of Dr. Muller?
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Tell me about, what do you say to your brother now?
I'm so grateful to him. Yeah, I'm eternally grateful to him. Yeah.
Imagine where you could be now if you had not met Dr. Muller.
Oh, I know.
And your brother is a Christian, that's why he heard from him?
He is a Christian, yes.
And how do your children react, your little eight-year-old? How's he getting along now?
Well, he's 21. he actually has lots of unanswered questions. He's at that age where he is questioning everything. Like, he can't get his head around the entrance of sin if God created all things perfect. I have my eldest daughter is a Christian, and my second eldest daughter is a Christian as well. The next one down believes in God, but she's kind of living her best life in the world. And my eldest son is an atheist, although when I spoke to him, he's not living in New Zealand, and I was visiting him earlier this year, and we talked about the law of life. Now that I understand it a little bit more, he goes, oh, so from a functional point of view, he really liked it. He said, so God is just a source of love, and you get to take the power from him and do good things with it by others. He goes, oh, that's kind of cool. And he liked that, but he's not in favour of a personal God, because he misunderstands what he reads in the Bible.
It's very hard, because I realise now my problem was I went to Sunday school And at Sunday school, they simplify it and they present the sort of little kids' version of heaven and hell and God. And so I had a picture of a man with a beard up in the sky, and at the top of the sky was heaven, and down beneath us was hell. And when I died, I'd become something gaseous and I'd float up into the sky. And I thought at a very young age this was obvious nonsense. But of course, it's nothing like that. It's so sophisticated, logical, reasonable, intellectual and deep. And you've actually got to approach it in quite an adult way. The way it was presented to me as a little school kid, that's and when I look back on myself, that's how I regarded Christians. Oh, they believe, and they have that terrible phrase, oh, you believe in the sky fairy. Well, that's how I thought. Oh, they believe in the sky fairy. And it's nothing like that. It is so, you know.
I've got a brother who says things like that to me.
And it's so hurtful to a Christian.
Yeah. Well, we have to understand, you know, that we're born with the same problem, you know. And until we see it, we don't see it.
Margaret Fletcher, I can't believe the conversation we've just had. I feel the love of God through you.
Praise the Lord.
And thank you. And to think that there are people who are suffering now who could find that love and repair themselves. You've done that.
With God's help, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
and I do offer this information to people. I'm offering 4-day health retreats. It's donation only, so nobody is excluded. Or, you know, they can talk to me. So I sent in the email for that. If people are interested,
we'll put a link, listeners, under the replay so you can get a hold of Margaret. And if you feel the need, if you think she could help, if you think God could help, there'll be the contact under the replay. Margaret, bless you.
God bless you too.
That was quite a different interview than I was expecting. And you know, God works in mysterious ways because I've been reading C.S. Lewis. And I struggle. I've read it over and over and over again. And I love it. I'm reading Mere Christianity. I must have read it 10 times. And sometimes I just dwell on a couple of sentences and think, that is so profound. And then I get the King James Bible down. I've got Bible commentaries and I'm looking at that. And I'm sort of glimmering at it. And everything you said resonated exactly with what C.S. Lewis is teaching me.
Wow. You know, I have not read Mere Christianity, and I'm going to read it. I've heard you talk about it a few times.
Well, it's a funny thing because I remember the first free market book that I read, and I noticed people have their favorite free market book, and it's the first one that opens your eyes to how freedom works and we can coordinate. And you have a book on philosophy that you read, and it was a big thing, and you went, this is the best book. And I guess this is my first serious Christian book that I've read. Yeah. And so it affected me very deeply, and it could have been another book.
Yes,
but
yes.
I've never read anything like it in my life. I've never read a book. I've read a lot. I've studied a lot. And I feel so stupid and so lacking in any understanding of the world and of morality and of why we think the way we think, why we are the way we are, until I read C.S. Lewis, and it's like, turn my world inside up and down. And how differently do you look at your children and your wife?
Yeah.
So different. Because you have the love. And it's a law of life.
Yes.
Because you take, in order to give, you take the love and you can give the love and it's without condition.
Yes.
Because God loves us without condition. That's the point, right? Unconditional.
That's right. And if you think about it, if everything is taking and then giving, taking and giving, taking and giving. Everything works in a circuit, and you see that in God's creation. You know, you see it cycles everywhere in nature. I always think of the Krebs cycle or the water cycle or, you know, so many cycles. Everything is made in the image of God. I think, you know, from the cosmos down to the most smallest particle, everything is made in the image of God.
Margaret Fletcher, please stay in touch. I think we'll have you back if we can, if you'd like to.
Thank you.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.